Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. As we come your way every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., and then we are archived at the radio show's page of richarddugan.com. We also link to our guests' website, if they have one, and most everybody does these days. So we encourage you to go to their website and see what is available through what they have to offer. And many times they have books, they have CDs, they have seminars, workshops, and sometimes they have newsletters that you can get for free, just submitting your email address and away you go. Well, today we're going to have a little bit of fun here. I think we're going to deal with your soul. Yes, your soul and my soul. Not the soles of your feet, but the soul. I'm not even sure where it dwells. Maybe we'll get an answer to that question as well. We're going to be talking about both The Soul's Plan and The Soul's Gift, the author of both of these works, as well as websites by the same name, yoursoulsplan.com, as well as Your Soul's Plan. That's the main website for both of these books and the work that we're doing here. And we're inviting you to stay with us because we're going to be talking with the author Robert Schwartz. And Robert, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Richard. Thank you.
As I sort of commented at the beginning there, the soul, the question seems to still be out there as far as the definition of the soul, where it resides, what it is that the shall we say, illuminating or what have you, animating aspect of who and what we are? You know, what is the real deal there in that respect? Maybe we should start there because this is what you're focusing on, is our given souls, and discovering the real meaning of the life you planned before you were born is, of course, the subtitle of The Soul's Plan, and then, of course, The Soul's Gift, the healing power of the life you planned before you were born. So you've got a nice little sequel going here.
Yes, as the titles of the book suggest, I'm an author and a hypnotist. And my specialty is something called a between-life soul regression, in which we can find out what the client planned before they were born. The two books are actually based on sessions with mediums and channels who, in one way or another, could find out the same information, what somebody planned before they were born and why. So I have been studying and working in this field for many years now, have examined many, many pre-birth plans. And it's my firm belief, and what all of my research shows, is that we ourselves plan our lives before we're born. This includes the pre-birth planning of our greatest challenges. And the main intentions of my books and my private practice in hypnotherapy are to help people understand why they themselves would have planned a great challenge prior to birth. That understanding brings about a profound healing. And it also allows the person to learn the underlying lessons in a much more conscious and much less arduous manner.
Well, that's something that we have certainly touched upon on this program over the years, is finding one's life purpose. But also in just the last few months, we've been talking with people about this whole process of, shall we say, soul healing. Now, I'm certainly, as we both are, and most of our listeners are quite familiar with the aspects of needing physical and mental and emotional healing of a lot of the different things that have affected us over this lifetime and, for many who believe, over past lifetimes as well. I always thought that the soul or spirit, and I'm wondering if those are the one and the same, if that's a synonymous term that you would equate, but I'd never even thought about it in terms of the soul needing healing.
It is correct, in a certain sense, to say that souls do need healing, but it's important to understand what is meant by that. So let me use a metaphor. Let's say that you were walking through an old abandoned house that was filled with cobwebs. And you walk through a cobweb, and it clings to your face, it clings to your neck, it clings to your shoulders. To you, this would feel, for lack of a better word, icky, and you would want immediately to brush or clear the cobweb off your body. Roughly speaking, this is how it feels to your soul if you, the incarnate personality, a small portion of your soul's energy in a physical body, acquire in one or more incarnations a belief or a feeling about yourself that is not true. It feels, again, for lack of a better word, icky to the soul, and the soul wants to clear or heal it. Almost everybody has had at least one past life, if not multiple past lives, in which certain things happened that caused them to adopt beliefs or feelings about themselves that the soul knows to be untrue. Two of the most common are, one, a belief that one is unworthy or perhaps even worthless, and two, a belief or a feeling that one is powerless. If you adopt either of those, again, this is something that feels discordant to the soul, and the soul will attempt in every way it can to bring about healing. Now, the way in which that happens seems counterintuitive to us, because what happens is, you know, Richard, the third dimension serves as a mirror. It mirrors back to you everything that is within your consciousness, at any level of consciousness, including the subconscious and the unconscious. And it does this so that if there's something there that's in need of healing, like a belief in unworthiness or powerlessness, the belief then comes to the light of conscious awareness where you can set about healing it. So what often happens is that if somebody has had an experience in a past life that caused them to believe that they're unworthy or worthless or powerless or any number of other things that the soul knows to be untrue, often this will result in the pre-birth planning of a difficult life challenge, which seems to confirm to the person that they are, in fact, unworthy or worthless or powerless. Again, it's because the world is serving as a mirror to you. It mirrors back to you whatever is within your consciousness so that you can bring it to the light of conscious awareness and then set about healing it. This is, in fact, how some of the more unpleasant things in our world end up happening. Now, I know that from our very human perspective, this seems harsh and perhaps even punitive, but I can assure you, based upon many years of research in this field, it is not the universe's intention to be either harsh or punitive. The universe is loving, and in its infinite love for you, it brings to you experiences that sometimes are quite, quite difficult, but the intention is to foster healing.
Okay. Now, I have an analogy that I think is appropriate here, and I'll ask you to say yay or nay on that appropriateness. Many of us have challenges and struggles driving in our respective cities and towns and so forth, and we get a little frustrated with, you know, what we would judge as the stupidity of others. And we've probably done the same thing and frustrated and irritated other drivers as well. And I remember someone saying to me, and in the midst of my challenging driving career, as it were, that that person that just cut you off did not wake up this morning conspiring to get you any more than the guy later in the afternoon did the same thing, not letting you merge onto the freeway. I.e., the analogy referring to the universe isn't conspiring against us, is what I'm hearing.
I would absolutely agree with that. If you want to use the word conspiring, then the universe is conspiring for us to bring about healing, to bring about enlightenment, to bring about love, peace, and joy. It's sometimes done in a way that the human mind finds almost impossible to understand. But, you know, if you look at the long-term trajectory of people who face what we would consider to be severe life challenges, over a period of years, the challenge quite often ends up being the very thing that motivates and inspires them and creates the circumstances necessary for a life of tremendous love, peace, and joy. And this is why, you know, you hear of stories of people who say, you know, that thing that happened to me 10 years ago, 20 or 30 years ago that I thought was so awful, it has turned out to be the best thing that has ever happened to me. That's what the universe is attempting to do.
Well, and that's what I'm hearing from more and more people, as a matter of fact. And when we start looking at the things that have happened in our lives, you know, there would be those, the question would be asked, well, if there was anything you could change in your life, what would it be? And I take a look at that question, and of course, I think an awful lot about a lot of the science fiction programs that I've watched regarding going back in time and altering this, that, the other thing, and the another analogy of grabbing a thread of the tapestry in that time frame and you unravel everything, and you're no longer who you are in the present. If you were to take away any one of the major or minor in what seemingly are insignificant events. And more people I'm hearing are basically saying that they may not acknowledge, yes, I planned this long before I came into this life. They may not acknowledge that much of it, but what they do say is that they have come out the other side of whatever the trauma is, wiser, stronger, just a lot of wonderful, if you will, character building attributes, if you will, that have placed them where they are, and they're enjoying their life today. And if they hadn't gone through that, well, who knows? I mean, and I guess that's the other thing too. It reminds me of that phrase I hear in a lot of documentaries, historical documentaries. Let's just say, for example, it's a documentary about Pearl Harbor. And if the Japanese hadn't attacked Pearl Harbor, it would have changed the course of history, or because they did it. And I'm thinking, how did you know what the course was that now has been changed because of this massive event, this, you know, day of infamy, if you will? I always find that a kind of humorous when I hear that, because I would like to know who knows what what the course is supposed to be. And then when you get to the individual level for yourself and myself, you know, I think about some of the things that have happened in my life. And, you know, again, I wouldn't be sitting here in Santa Barbara, California, talking with you over Skype about our soul and the soul's gift and the soul's plan and the work that you're doing if I hadn't. I honestly believe that would be the case. And that has a ripple effect into the lives of everyone else. You've heard of that one phrase about the butterfly effect?
Butterfly effect,
yes. Yeah. So we are where we are. We've experienced what we've experienced. We have associated with those that we've associated with. And here we are. And now what are we going to do? And I guess when you talk about doing past life regression, or so to speak, I don't know if this is metaphorical or not, because maybe there is a literal on the spiritual level or on other dimensional level contract that we actually signed that we could get a hold of and say, oh, I see. And I understand too, Robert, the contract, even now that we're in the midst of it, I'm 55, can still be negotiated. Can still be altered if I'm not correct. Is that true?
Not only can it be, but for the average person, it is on an ongoing basis. And the way that happens is that we leave our bodies when we sleep at night. We travel in, the term that is used often is light body. And we travel in light body, our spirit body, back into the non-physical realm, and we meet with the significant people in our lives. We talk about what's going on. Are we fulfilling the plans that we created together before we were born? If not, how can we better fulfill those plans? Or do we want to change the plan? And so it ends up getting modified on an ongoing basis.
So the contract hasn't been signed in blood.
Not in blood.
And so we actually are changing it, but even if we're not doing it consciously. But you're talking now about learning how to do it consciously and saying, hey, you know, this has been fun up to now, you know, I say tongue in cheek. But I'm really kind of, it's kind of like what I say with people about the way that life is in general for all of us on the planet right now. My dad is 84 this year. Actually, I beg your pardon, 85. And so he's lived almost twice as long as I have. And I'm already tired of the way things are. You know, I'm already frustrated and wanting things to be better, but not just for me, but for everybody. You know, that it seems like so many people, and again, now this goes into a realm, I think, a combination of predestination, but also that contract that we just mentioned. Someone told me that we all have a role to play in this, we'll call it, movie that we're all in. And that's all we're doing. That from the universe's standpoint, Robert, there's no judgment by the universe as to our roles. And every single human being has been just playing their role. And you and I, as humans, with our ego, we'll judge those roles as whether they were good or evil. But the universe doesn't do that. It's just a play.
Yeah, that is exactly my understanding. The roles that we are playing were scripted by us and the other significant people in our lives before any of us were born. And it is very much a play on a stage. Now, we don't remember that it's a play on a stage, and there are very good reasons for the amnesia in regard to pre-birth planning. One of the main reasons it's done that way is that on the earth plane, a lot of the growth comes through the experience of intense emotions. And if you remembered your pre-birth plan, and if you could see your guides and angels all around you and your deceased loved ones, for the average person, this would have the effect of making you very much aware that you're just playing a role in a play on a stage. And that in turn would diffuse a lot of the intensity of the emotion, which in turn would reduce a lot of the growth that comes through the intense emotion. But when you forget that it's playing, when you think that it's all real and very, very serious, then the emotions you experience are much more intense. And how you respond to them and what you do with them in large part determines the healing and the growth that come out of a lifetime. I think another reason that we forget, intentionally plan to forget our pre-birth plans and our eternal life on the other side, is that, you know, it's sort of like the difference between an open book test and a closed book test at school. If you are in school and you're going to take a test and you know that it's open book, there's a tendency not to study as hard and therefore you don't learn as much because you know you can look up the answers during the exam. But in a closed book test, you study a lot harder and you end up learning a lot more. So if you had full recall of your pre-birth plan, for most people that would be the equivalent of an open book test and there would be less learning involved. A lot of the learning comes through being forced, through the amnesia, to decide which questions are you going to ask, which of those are important enough to actually pursue the answers to, and then undergo the process of pursuing the answers. If you had all the answers because you remembered everything about what you came here to learn, then that whole process would be completely diffused.
It's extraordinary the information that we have access to and available to us. We're going to talk more about that as we continue talking with Robert Schwartz. He is the author of a couple of very extraordinary books, Your Soul's Plan and The Soul's Gift, Your Soul's Gift. And they sort of go hand in hand. So we encourage you to go to the website, which is yoursoulsplan.com. That's yoursoulsplan.com. And find out more about what we're talking about. And I think that for me, It's something that I'm really kind of looking forward to from that standpoint, because it's a process that we're all going through. We can't really escape it. And in many instances, I suppose you might say, well, you don't really want to, because there's going to be a lot learned from this process. And we're going to learn more from Robert Schwartz here on the Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we want you to stay right where you are. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Robert Schwartz. He is the author of Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, and we're talking about your soul. And I think that in this new year, here we are in 2016, and I've heard many people, Robert, talking about how bad the previous year was. And of course, that almost kind of goes without saying every year, as we get to the end of the year and resolutions and a new, fresh, clean slate and, you know, and so forth, that the previous year was just, it was just terrible. And I don't see it quite that way myself, but I offer this advice, and that is, if you can pick out the good things of the previous year, whatever year you're listening to this interview, take those good things, bring them forward, and expand upon them. That's the best I have. That's the best I have to offer at this particular point, Robert. And I think maybe that's a good observation, maybe in terms of taking a look at where we've been, both in this life, in our present history, but also past lives. And you do past life regression, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I do past life regressions, but the vast majority of my practice is what is called the between life soul regression, which is similar to a past life regression. In fact, we start out with a relatively short past life regression, but the difference is that in a pure past life regression, it ends at the end of the past life. In a between lives regression, we keep going. So the client's consciousness transitions from the end of the past life back to the other side. And then at that point, a lot of different things can happen, but about 80% of my clients are greeted by one of their spirit guides. They will talk with the guide briefly about why they were shown the particular past life they saw and how it affected the plan for the current lifetime. And then again, at that point, a lot of different things can happen. But most people are escorted by the guide to what is called the Council of Elders. The council consists of the very wise, loving, and highly evolved beings who oversee the cycle of reincarnation on Earth. They know literally everything about the client, not just the plan for the current lifetime, but every other lifetime they've ever lived. So getting in front of the Council of Elders is a potentially life-changing experience because they can answer literally any question that is put to them. So clients will ask, why did this happen? Did I plan it? Why did I plan it? How do I best respond to it or heal from it now? They can ask any question really on any area of their life. It's generally about a 3.5-hour session. And a lot of times people will come out of it and they'll say, you know what, I got an answer to every question I asked and I don't have any questions about my life anymore. It's potentially that transformative.
Well, that's rather interesting because I know that you know, we all have these questions. I theorized many years ago, 20, 25, maybe 30 years ago, that as I was observing and remembering when babies are born and the relatives are standing around and they're looking at this new arrival, and they begin to express their observations of the child. Has so-and-so's eyes and so-and-so's ears and the so-and-so's smile. And then as they start growing up and expressing their personalities, then you start hearing, has so-and-so's laughter or so-and-so's temper or so-and-so's compassion or what have you. And I got to thinking, well, if we can take on the attributes of our ancestors, and this is an interesting dynamic here, physically, if we can take on those attributes, and emotionally, and in some cases mentally, some people say, "Oh, he has his so-and-so's interest in this subject or that subject." I thought, well, why couldn't the same be true on the soul or spirit level? So now I'm curious, in terms of past lives and even between lives, in that respect, this whole aspect of ancestry. And we're even choosing the bloodline that we would come into in a given life?
We are choosing that. In the research that I did for Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, what I found is that 100% of the time, everybody chooses before they're born who their parents are going to be, and the parents choose who their children are going to be. And this is true even in cases of adoption. There's an entire chapter in Your Soul's Gift about the pre-birth planning of adoption. And in that case, the parents and adoptive children find each other through the law of attraction, through vibration. So some things, like who your parents or who your children are going to be, are planned 100% of the time prior to birth. In the case of challenges or experiences that happen later in life, as a general rule, the more significant they are, the more likely it is that it was planned prior to birth. But what I found is that the vast majority of significant life experiences, both what we would call positive and negative, are set up as potentials in the pre-birth plan. The word potentials is the key there. They're not generally set up as certainties. So it's not correct, as I understand it, to say that everything is predestined. We have free will, and there's a very elegant, intricate interworking of free birth planning and free will. And we can talk more about that as we go on. But most things, especially if they're significant, are set up as potentials prior to birth.
And in that light of, you know, this whole aspect of, I guess the thing that really comes to my mind is my experiences with the Christian radio station that I refer to regularly on this program, where I was listening to all of the prophecies, you know, especially about the end times, as from the Christian tradition. And I'd only been there maybe 5 or 6 years, but of course I'd been hearing about this. I was born and raised Catholic, and I'd been hearing a bit about this kind of stuff, even in church every so often, or in catechism. And I began to ask the question, is there something I can do to help precipitate this process? Because I'm really getting bored with this story. I'd like a new story, like the 1,000 years of peace, if you will, which is supposedly the next incarnation. But I got to thinking about this, and I watch a lot of these movies and TV shows dealing with prophecies and how hard everybody is fighting to keep them from coming to pass. And yet everybody believes that they're going to come to pass. So it's like, why don't you just sit back and just let it happen? And so forth. I mean, people just struggle to no end. So I think about that in terms of, for example, our life's purpose, your purpose, Robert, my purpose, the purpose of those listening. That's part of the contract, but it's something that obviously can be altered and changed and negotiated, if you will, or rewritten, however you want to phrase it, as we live this present day life. How much of what we experienced between lives impacts all of that and the role that, can I put it this way, that we're supposed to play in the present day that's going to generate the history that people will look back on, a kind of a situation?
I think you can use the word supposed to, but again, it's important to be mindful of the fact that we all have free will, and it intersects with our pre-birth planning. I'll share a hypothetical story with you that I think can be helpful to understand this. Let's say that there is a soul, and I'm arbitrarily going to use a female name here, so no sexism intended. There's a soul we will call Sally, who's had a number of past lives in which she made certain plans before she came into body. But then when she got here, she had a tendency to defer to the wishes of others. She let other people tell her how to live her life. Not an unusual thing to do. When Sally has her life review at the end of those lifetimes, and we all do have a life review at the end of each life, she will see that she has this tendency to defer to the wishes of others. And most likely she will be motivated to heal it. So the way that she will do that is energetically, in her DNA, she will bring back into body the tendency to defer to the wishes of others, not with the intention of expressing it again, but rather in the hope of healing it. So she creates that plan. Now let's say there's another soul in her soul group, and we'll arbitrarily give the name George to this soul, who's had a number of past lives in which he had the opposite tendency. George is a soul who, after he gets into body, does not respect others, exercises power inappropriately over others. He's the one who's telling other people how to live their lives. When George has his life reviews, like Sally, he sees that he has this tendency, and he is motivated to heal it. So he plans, energetically, to carry that tendency to inappropriately dominate others back into body. Again, not for the purpose of expressing it, but rather for the purpose of healing it. Now, since they're in the same soul group, Sally is aware of George's pre-birth plan. So she goes to him before either one of them is born, and she says something like, "Hey, George, I am taking back into body the tendency to defer to the wishes of others for the purpose of healing it. I see that you have the opposite tendency, the tendency to dominate others, and that you're planning to take it back into body also in order to heal it. Why don't you and I create a pre-birth plan to marry, say, around the age of 30? And although this will probably be a turbulent marriage, our hope is, our intention is, that it will be an opportunity for me to learn to stand up for myself and live life on my own terms. And it will be an opportunity for you to learn to respect the wishes of others. And George says, you know what, Sally, this is a great idea. Let's do it. So the plan is put into place. Now let's say hypothetically that when Sally is 25 years old, she gets a job with an employer who is running roughshod over her, treating her with a profound lack of respect and kindness. And let's also say that she marshals her internal resources and she takes a stand. She says to her employer, stop. You may not treat me like this. If you want me to continue working here, you must treat me with respect and kindness. In the moment that Sally takes a stand like that, there's a tremendous increase in her frequency, her vibration. If she can sustain that heightened vibration until she's age 30, now one of two things will happen. Either she and George will never meet, because by virtue of the law of attraction, their frequencies are so dissimilar, they're never even brought together. Or if they do meet, now there's no attraction. There's one date, and then nothing happens, because their vibration is so dissimilar. So in this hypothetical, Sally uses her free will to learn the plan lesson, which in turn obviates the need for the challenge. So the marriage simply never takes place because she doesn't need it anymore. Now somebody will say, well, what about George? Doesn't he still have to learn the lesson that he planned? Yes, absolutely. But it's not the case that there's only a plan A for a lifetime. There is, but there's also a plan B, C, D, E, F, and on and on and on beyond human comprehension. So George now moves to plan B, which could be almost anything, another relationship that gives him the opportunity to respect his partner, or some other set of circumstances in which he can learn the same lesson. And if he doesn't learn it there, he goes to plan C, plan D, and on, until finally he learns the planned lesson, whether in this lifetime or another lifetime. So you see, in that hypothetical, there is this very elegant, intricate meshing of free will and pre-birth planning.
The first person who came to mind as you wrapped up that analogy was Zsa Zsa Gabor. with like 9 or 10 marriages, or Elizabeth Taylor with about as many. And that analogy would kind of fit in that apparently these women in particular didn't find in the mates that they married what they were looking for, and so they just kept going to the next one, and the next one, the next one, plan C, D, E, F, G, as it were. So, and I would say that probably the same thing is true in my case, because I've had one previous marriage. Didn't want it to end, but it was no longer, the way I look at it, it was no longer serving me. Not just her, but me as well. And as you say, the dynamic that we say agree to between lives, sounds to me extremely important, because it's and this kind of goes to another question of why are we doing this? What is the whole purpose? Okay, we're between lives now. We're sitting here and we're negotiating. Former Robert and former Richard, we're now in the spirit realm and we're working out a contract. And I know that I don't believe that there's male and female in the spirit realm, as it were. That's just just so that we can better, I suppose, grapple with that, if you will. So we're working out these plans just like you described. And, hey, I this is what I'd like to do. And you have this propensity to go in the opposite direction. So let's make this agreement that we'll meet somewhere along the way in the next life and et cetera, et cetera. And as you say, these plans can all be changed as we go through life if we have certain experiences that have sort of taken care of that need, if you will?
Yes, but you know, when you ask the question, why are we doing this? Why are we even bothering with it in the first place? There are a number of reasons for that. One of them we've already discussed, and that is healing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few others. One of them is balancing karma. My understanding of karma is that it's unresolved emotional attachments, and it's we ourselves who decide whether or not we're resolved with something. So if we decide that we're not, we plan experiences for the upcoming lifetime in which we can gain a sense of completion with whatever is not yet complete. There's also a very strong component in every single pre-birth plan I've ever looked at of service to others. This theme of service has come up 100% of the time in one form or another, to one degree or another. We plan these roles and these challenges before birth in order to help each other heal and learn and grow. But the main reason for all of it is that it's a contextual field. And what I mean by that is that on the other side, especially at the soul level, things are very much, as I understand it, the way they're classically portrayed. In other words, the non-physical realm in which the soul, I'll say, resides, for lack of a better word, is one of tremendous love and peace and light and joy. And in such a realm, the soul experiences no contrast to itself. So the soul has these eternal qualities of love, peace, and joy that are its essential nature, but there's no contextual field or contrast in which to have the experience of those qualities. So in order to get the actual experience of them, it's necessary to create what is really an artificial environment, the third dimension, in which you can experience the opposite of those qualities, the so-called not love, as I like to put it. And we would all agree there's a lot of that in the world. Mm-hmm. The experience of the not love teaches us in much more profound ways what true unconditional love really is. And so if we are successful in giving and receiving love as much as we can over the course of a lifetime, then by the time we leave our bodies and return home to the non-physical realm, we have had the experience of what it means to be a soul that is made literally from the energy of unconditional love. So it's the contrast that's provided by life in the third dimension that leads to a much more profound self-knowing, self-awareness, self-understanding. And that, I think, is really what the soul is doing here on the physical plane.
Well, and I'm going to have to beg your indulgence in further explanation, because I want to take it back even further. You know how in science they want to go back to the creation of the universe, and they tap it back to the Big Bang. Of course, then the next question is, well, what came before the Big Bang? We started this process. The soul world, the spirit world, started this process at, I'm going to say, some point in time. And that's where the question really ends up going, is why in the world would we bother to do this in the first place? And the answer that I seem to get pretty regularly, not 100% of the time, is because we wanted to have the experiences. And I look at that going, you got to be kidding me. Really? That's it? If we're like a small piece of the holographic God or universal power or whatever the essence of the universe is, why would we need that? I mean, how is it that that could have escaped us if we're what we claim to be as part of God? Is that
for the experience is essentially my understanding as well. Again, there are other motivations, other intentions, like balancing karma and healing and service to others. But when you boil it all down, it is for the experience. Let me give an example from one of my books. Maybe this will make it more concrete.
Okay.
You know, the books, Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, are organized by a type of life challenge. So there are chapters about the pre-birth planning of pretty much every major challenge one could face in life. Poverty, relationship challenges, physical illness, mental illness, miscarriage and abortion, different sexual experiences and orientations. I mentioned there's a chapter on adoption. There's even a chapter about the pre-birth planning we do with our future pets, and so on. So one of the chapters in Your Soul's Plan is a chapter about the pre-birth planning of accidents, which are not really accidents because they're part of the plan. And there are two stories in that chapter. One of them is a woman named Christina, who's now in her 60s. But she shares with me, and I share in the book, a story that took place when she was in her early 20s. She was an administrative assistant at a college in Southern California, not all that far from you, actually. And one of her daily duties in that job was to pick up her boss's mail. The mailboxes were located in the basement of the building in which Christina worked. So on one particular day, just as she had done hundreds of times before, Christina descended those stairs to the basement mailboxes to pick up her employer's mail. But on this particular day, unbeknownst to her, someone had planted a pipe bomb in her boss's mailbox. When she inserted her hand to pick up the mail, the pipe bomb detonated. The force from this explosion was so great that it picked Christina up off the floor, hurled her 10 feet backwards against a concrete wall. There were splinters of wood that were 6 foot long that were shot like arrows out of a bow into the wall around her. Two fingers were severed, both eardrums were ruptured, and flames from the explosion scorched Christina's body from head to toe. When she got to the hospital, doctors actually had to hold magnets over her eyeballs to extract the shrapnel from the pipe. So we're talking here about a level of suffering that's almost unimaginable to you and me and most of the people who will hear this interview. Now, you raised the question, why are we doing this? And why in the world would Christina want, before she was born, to have an experience like that? Well, her recovery took 2 years and 10 reconstructive surgeries. And at one point during this two-year period, she was lying in her hospital bed in a tremendous amount of pain when she suddenly heard a voice inside her head, a voice that was not her own. It turns out that the force from this explosion, in addition to doing a lot of damage to her body, had also opened up Christina's psychic gift. She had become clairaudient. And the voice she heard that day as she was lying in her hospital bed in so much pain was one of her spirit guides. The guide said to her, "You planned this." And of course, she said, "Why?" And then the guide told her, and here's what he said. He said, "You wanted, before you were born, to have the experience of being a gifted healer. And so you planned, pre-birth, to have some devastating physical accident, and then to heal yourself from that accident, and then to take all the wisdom and knowledge you acquired in the process and turn it outward in service to others to help them heal." And there you see that intention of service to others that I talked about earlier. Well, this is in fact exactly what happened with Christina, because after she recovered from those 10 reconstructive surgeries, she went on to get a PhD in speech-language pathology. She set up a private clinical practice, and at this point in her career has healed literally thousands of people. She actually has the ability to go into a client's brain energetically, by which I mean non-invasively, and restore language processing capability in people who have lost that due to stroke or accident. So a remarkably gifted healer, and the only reason she can do any of this is because she healed herself from the devastating effects of that bomb explosion. Now, when I interviewed her, she said two extraordinary things to me. The first she said, "Rob, I have completely forgiven the person who planted that bomb." That in and of itself, given her level of suffering, I think is remarkable. But then she said something even more amazing to me. She said, "Rob, I am deeply grateful to the person who planted that bomb." And when she says she's deeply grateful, she really means it. So this to me is one of the most powerful stories I've seen of what somebody can do with an awareness of their pre-birth plan. You know, you can easily imagine, Richard, that she could have been bitter and angry for the rest of her life. She could have been resentful for the rest of her life. She might even have chosen to devote the rest of her life to tracking down the bomber and taking revenge. But because she came into this awareness of her pre-birth plan and then worked with it, really worked with it over a period of a few years, didn't happen overnight, she was able to get to a place of complete forgiveness and then a place of complete gratitude. Now, Christina's story is unusual in that it was a bomb explosion, but she herself is not unusual. If she can do it, then you and I can do it in regard to whatever our challenges may have been, and anyone listening to this interview can do it in regard to what their challenges may have been. You know, the frequency of victim is the single lowest frequency, the single lowest vibration a human being can be at. And when you vibrate at the frequency of victim, you are stating to the universe that that's what you are, and the universe is always your obedient servant, so it brings to you more experiences that seem to confirm that you are, in fact, a victim. And this is how people get stuck, sometimes for very long periods of time, in being a victim. what an awareness of your pre-birth plan does, and what Christina did with her awareness of her plan, is that it pulls you out of victim consciousness. So then you're stating to the universe that you are not a victim, that you are, in fact, the powerful creator of what you experience, and that makes an entirely new life and profound healing possible.
That is an extraordinary story. Wow. That then raises an interesting series of questions for me in regards to, especially from the book, The Soul's Plan, because you go through, I mean, each of the many of the chapters reference, you talk about the pre-birth plan, you talk about physical illness and give examples. You also talk about parenting handicapped children, which is what my parents did. You also talk about deafness and blindness, which is what I experienced, the blindness part, but not to the degree. And then, of course, you also talk about drug abuse and other conditions as well. And you give stories of people who went through those various experiences. And I find it interesting. The reason I bring this up is because while working for this particular station back in Phoenix, I had people come up to me who wanted to quote unquote heal my sight. Basically, they wanted to restore it, as it were, and I refused, because when I came into this life, when I came in as a baby, my vision was worse than it was when I was in my 30s, because I'd had many surgeries. But I also said that my purpose in life, as I saw it then and sort of still see it now, is not to be healed, in spite of whatever biblical edicts they wanted to toss up about, showing the glory of God and so forth, which is a wonderful thing. But I said, look, if he wants to heal me, he knows where I am. He can even call collect. I'll take the charges. But that's not why I'm here. I'm here to do what I'm doing. And at that time, you know, I was, again, that whole aspect of service, I really felt, it, whether I agreed or disagreed with the doctrine or the dogma, whatever the beliefs that they were sharing, my position was, it didn't matter what I thought. What did matter was that when their presentation was made, it was clean, it was clear, and it was understandable, so that the general public, the listening audience, the radio audience, could make up their own minds without distraction. That was what my purpose was, and still is to this day, that hopefully I am not distracting the listener from what you're sharing in any way, shape, or form. I'm hoping I'm elucidating with you, Robert, on what you're talking about, so that the listener can make up their own mind. Or if they choose to go to your website, which is thesoulsplan.com, they can do the same thing. They make up their own mind. I don't want to be a filter. I just want to be, I guess you might say, the conduit or the portal, if you will.
Well, I think what you have just articulated is a beautiful, intuitive understanding of your life purpose. You know, it reminds me, the very first talk I ever gave about my first book, Your Soul's Plan, right after it came out, I was at a little bookstore in Ashland, Oregon, where I was living at the time where I wrote Your Soul's Plan. And after the talk was over, a young man came up to me. He must have been about 30 years old. And he said, you know, my wife and I have a child who's a few years old who was born deaf. And we know that there are things that can be done about it, like a cochlear implant. But we've never done anything like that, and we don't plan to, because we just have this intuitive sense that our child came here in part for this experience of being deaf. And all of our friends and family tell us that we're crazy and we're doing a terrible disservice to our child. But we've resisted listening to them so far because, again, we just have this intuitive feeling that this is the experience our child came here to have, and we don't want to deprive the child of it. What do you think of that? And I said, you know, only you can have a sense of what this is all about. Trust your intuition, and if you feel that this is the plan for your life and your wife's life and your child's life, then honor what your intuition tells you. And this is something that has come up again and again in my work. You know, when I worked with the mediums and channels, we actually went into people's pre-birth planning sessions, which the mediums were able to do. And we were able to eavesdrop retroactively on the conversations that had taken place when the planning sessions were held. A lot of the discussion in which souls were planning life challenges, like blindness and deafness, a lot of the discussion revolved around a soul-level desire to cultivate certain qualities, which I eventually gave the name divine virtues to. Now, these are things that are important to the soul, and the soul wants to cultivate them and also then express them while in physical body. In other words, have the experience of them. And they're things like compassion, forgiveness, patience, empathy, unconditional love, and so on. One of the divine virtues is something called self-referencing. And souls were actually using that word, self-referencing, in the pre-birth planning session. What it means is that you come to see yourself as the highest and best source of wisdom and knowledge for you. You know, I think we live in a historical time period in which the average person is conditioned very early on in life by society, parents, teachers at school, to think that whatever question or problem you have, there's an expert out there somewhere who has the answer. And all you have to do is find the expert and then do what they tell you to do. Well, from the soul's vantage point, that is a tremendously disempowered way to live a life. And some people have actually planned prior to birth to cultivate the divine virtue of being self-referencing. It doesn't mean they don't seek out the opinions of others, but when they do, they run what they are told past their own intuitive filter, and they decide, is this truth for me? So what you just shared about yourself, or the young man who shared about his child's deafness, these are great examples of being self-referencing, which is a quality the soul very much wants to cultivate and express during a physical lifetime.
You know, and interesting too, that I have never sought out nor actually found, for example, a particular teacher. I've had mentors, one in particular going back to Phoenix, who I viewed her as a mentor because she was very supportive of what I was doing. But at the same time, there were times when, yeah, I would receive a little chastisement. And I accepted that as guidance, not as a punishment per se. But I know a lot of people feel the need to get their wisdom, get their guidance on a spiritual level in particular from a particular source, you know, and that's all fine, well, and good. Have you found a particular percentage of those people who are, what was the term again, self?
Self-referencing.
Self-referencing. Have you found what kind of percentage as far as the number of people that you've been able to work with?
What I see, I have an entire exercise I do in spiritual guidance sessions called the Divine Virtues Exercise, where I've over the years have put together a list of the virtues that have come up the most in the pre-birth planning that I've studied. The list is not intended to be exhaustive. There are many, many qualities we work on in a lifetime. But the ones that have come up the most and they're on the list, there's now, I think, 27 or 28 of them. Self-referencing is one. And what I generally see when a client goes through the Divine Virtues exercise is that usually the person is working on two or three of the virtues in a lifetime. That would be the average experience. Occasionally, somebody is working on four or five. That's rare. The person who's working on four or five generally has a life that's filled with trauma. And if somebody listening to this interview doesn't know whether they're working on four or five, then most likely they're not. They're working on two or three. As to the percentage of people who are working on self-referencing or any given virtue, I have never quantified that. I will say that it's a small minority of clients who are specifically working on being self-referencing. I more commonly see people working on patience, perseverance, unconditional love. But, you know, all of these virtues are important to the soul. And sooner or later, in one lifetime or another, and usually in multiple lifetimes, we're going to work on all of these different virtues that are on the list.
I think it's really interesting. I mean, to me, it as you have shared, it gives such great insight into who and what we are, and where we've come from, and what we've come through, in this life, in the life between lives, if you will, as well as in past lives. And I always questioned many years ago. I used to question the whole validity, not the reality of reincarnation, not the reality of past lives, but what's the point? I mean, it's like I'm here now, you know, kind of thing. But when we get the opportunity that you afford through the work that you're doing, as well as the books, The Soul's Plan and The Soul's Gift, to better understand why we're here, and as an individual, not collectively, why are we as a human species even here? Not that question, but why are you as an individual here? What is it that you're here to do? Your life's purpose, some of the challenges or some of the experiences, if you will, that you've sort of placed before yourself. I remember, Robert, when my wife and I, my second wife and I went out to went to Ireland, and we were out on one of the Aran Islands in a stone granite fortress with a giant granite slab sticking out over the edge of the cliff. And I went out and I sat on the edge of it taking pictures of the cliffs left and right and below. No fear whatsoever. And I've often wondered, and I've only had that kind of intense, shall we say, if you can say intense, lack of fear, one other occasion when we both lost our jobs and then decided to move here to Santa Barbara. And I've often wondered where that came from, because I don't recall prior to, someone said to me that the only way that you can really experience pain is to have experienced it before and you have something to compare it to. Well, but that doesn't make any sense, because the first experience of pain is just that. You have to have the first. So I often wonder why in the world I would have those kinds of things, or why an individual would be devoid of certain reactions to stimuli in their life, as opposed to reacting and going, "Oh my gosh, I can't do that! It's no way. I'm not built that way. I don't have the makeup to do that." Whether it's skydiving or even taking on a particular task on the job, I don't have the technical skills to accomplish that. Or I often say, "I'm not a cook. I try. I give it a shot. I can follow a recipe in a book, but my wife." Get out of her way when she's in the kitchen, because she is unbelievable as a cook, just incredible. So I often wonder where these moments come from. Are they strictly from the past life?
I think certainly they can be. I know with the divine virtues, for example, sometimes when we go through the exercise, we'll find that a client, their entire life, scored very highly in certain virtues. And when we talk about it and tease it out, we discover that it's actually not something that they're working on in the current lifetime, but rather a strength that was cultivated in multiple past lives, and the quality was brought as a strength into the current lifetime. But it isn't actually something they focused on in the pre-birth plan to work on once again. So I think a lot of our strengths meet that kind of description. But the description that you gave of the cliffs and having no fear, one of the virtues is, I use the word attentiveness, which is synonymous with presence. And the experience you had of no fear at the cliff sounds like a moment of just tremendous presence. If you're fully present in the now moment, fully focused on what's around you, what's coming in through the five senses, then you're not going to be focused on feeling fear. And it sounds like you had a moment of just tremendous attentiveness or presence.
Yeah, well, and it's really funny. If I had averted my eyes from a giant mural on the back wall of the gift shop on the island where we were, I never would have actually seen where I was and had no point of reference. And 8 hours later is when the fear hit. It was like I was snug, safe, cold, warm in my bed where we were staying. And the fear, intense fear, that's when it hit. That was very strange. Very, very strange for me. Nonetheless, I'm real excited about the prospects for myself and our listeners as well to go through and learn more. It just seems to me like I talk often with my mother about some of the ancestral health conditions, you know, whether they're heart conditions or high blood pressure or joint this or, you know, whatever it is. And I'm going, oh, okay, that kind of explains it. And I can work with that a little bit better rather than saying, I've been really bad at taking care of my health, you know, in this lifetime. So to me, it's along the same lines. Oh, okay. Now I feel more at ease with where I am and what I'm doing, because now I understand how I got here. And I think that's really, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people.
Well, that is certainly one of the intentions of my work, is to help people understand more fully and deeply who they are and how they've become who they are. And then when they gain insight into the life plan, what they're going to do with the qualities who make them who they are. You know, when you boil it all down, a lot of it really comes down to giving and receiving love unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And the flow of love in the world is very much a circle. Half the circle is giving love to others, but half is receiving love from others. And so if somebody does not allow others to give love to them, that person is blocking the flow of love in the world just as much as if they don't give love to other people. And this is really what it all boils down to. You know, we're here to learn how to give and receive love unconditionally.
Yeah, there's always an exchange. The universe, that's the way it's been set up. The universe demands it, that there is always an exchange. But it may not be in the form that we think that it will be in. And that's one of the lessons that I learned many years ago. Co-workers were complaining about salaries or hourly wage and so forth. And I had one employee tell me, you guys don't pay me enough to do this task or that task. You know, I said, no, when you signed on, we told you what the tasks were. But one of the things that came to me was the fact that as I grew into that position, as I grew into the work that I was doing these kinds of interviews, and I was receiving these various books and CDs, and I would do the interview and I would save them on cassette, and I would actually make friends of some of the guests. That was the exchange that I saw. And so I didn't get trapped into the aspect of, well, look, I worked X number of hours and I should be getting X number of dollars more an hour because I'm doing so much more. I said, no, I'm getting it from other sources. And I think that's a lesson that we all could learn, especially in this day and age, especially since 2008 and all of that stuff, that you don't know where it's going to come from. And if you open yourself up, like you just said, you open yourself up to both give and receive, man, it just, maybe in one sense, it'll overwhelm you, I think. It'll take over and it'll be a wonderful life.
Well, I completely agree with what you've said, Richard. And as you pointed out, it's important to understand that, you know, blessings may not come in the form that we necessarily desire, or the universe works in sometimes inscrutable ways.
Indeed.
But there is very much a flow of blessings. And the way that you keep yourself in the flow is to be open to receive and keep giving. It's a circle.
Well, Robert, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today and sharing your story and the information that you have. It's quite extraordinary, and I certainly hope people will go to yoursoulsplan.com and check out all of the information that you have available to them. For them, I should say. Before we let you go, though, I have three final questions that I ask all of my guests. And the first one is, who is Robert Schwartz?
Robert Schwartz is a holy, eternal, courageous soul.
I like that. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I would like to help people awaken, by which I mean come into some understanding that they are more than the body, more than the mind, more than the thoughts and the feelings, that they are, in fact, what I just said, that I am, a holy, eternal, courageous being. Mm. Help them to heal and help them to see the deeper spiritual meaning and purpose of their challenges, which is a large part of the healing.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is to do those things that I just mentioned in service to others. and to speak my truth courageously with loving kindness. I've had a couple of past lives, one in Nazi Germany that I'm aware of, and another in Atlantis, where I was opposed apparently to atrocities that the authorities were carrying out, but lacked the courage to speak out against them. And so the plan for my current lifetime is to speak a truth which is not yet accepted by mainstream culture, speak it with courage, and speak it with loving kindness.
Well, Robert, thank you again for joining us. And if you ever find yourself out here on the West Coast, Central California, and Santa Barbara area, please let us know. We'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed talking with you, and it's been a pleasure to be here.
Website, once again, is yoursoulsplan.com, yoursoulsplan.com. My guest, Robert Schwartz, he's also the author of Your Soul's Gift, and we encourage you to check out the website. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.